When my children have birthdays, like many, many other families down the years, we have got into the tradition of making themed birthday cakes. When I say we, I mean mainly Ellen. She is the cake maker. Although my services are brought in as the designer, builder, and decorator. So I do play a part. And we have made a princess cake and a tractor cake and a Star Wars cake, BB-8, if you know who BB-8 is, a 10-pin bowling cake, and so on. For inspiration, we use, of course, the internet, which is full of impressive pictures of how to make the perfect Darth Vader cake, for example. But when you've made your cake, it's always sobering to compare the picture on the internet with the reality on your kitchen table. Actually, I think we normally do quite well. But the internet is also full of some very funny pictures of actual cakes compared with the original inspiration. This is what I was meant to make, a beautiful, hungry caterpillar cake. And this is what I ended up with, a lumpy, dirty slug cake. Not what was wanted. Anyway, something similar is going on in the New Testament descriptions of the Last Supper. There are four. Three of them are in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. The ideal. And the fourth is in 1 Corinthians, chapter 11. The reality. And it's sobering to see the contrast between the ideal as laid out by Jesus and the actual practice, really not many years later, in the early church, or at least the church in Corinth. Paul writes, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, in the following directions, I have no praise for you. When you come together, there are divisions among you. When you come together, it is not the Lord's Supper you eat. For as you eat, each one of you goes ahead without waiting for anyone else. One remains hungry, the other gets drunk, and so on. In the Gospels, this is what it should look like. In Corinthians, this is the mess we've managed to make of it. When John came to write his Gospel, the three other Gospels already existed. And so when he came to recording the events of the last evening that Jesus spent with his disciples, he focused on other parts of that evening. Instead of the symbols of bread and wine, he focuses on the symbolic action of Jesus in washing his disciples' feet. An enacted parable, bringing out, if you like, the spirit of love with which that last evening was infused. As John says at the beginning, he now showed them the full extent of his love. And perhaps, and this is entirely speculative, I found no commentary to suggest this, not my own here, perhaps John, writing a few years later than the Synoptic Gospels, could see how the Lord's Supper was being misused in some churches, some places, and so rather than focusing on the mechanics of Jesus and the bread and the wine, he focuses on the Spirit behind all this. Spirit of love symbolized in the washing of feet. It's highly symbolic. A symbol of service. Jesus taking the place and the role of a servant. As Mark says, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. A symbol of service. A symbol of washing. And beyond that, as you think into the life of the church, a symbol of baptism. Unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then, says Simon Peter, not just my feet, but my hands and my head. And then there's this comment by Jesus, if you've had a bath, you don't need a whole wash, just your feet. And it's not hard to see into that, not just the symbol of washing, but the symbol of baptism. But in some of the other details, we see something else symbolized in Jesus' actions. In fact, John goes into great detail regarding Jesus' actions, almost the choreography of the event. Have a look at verse 4. He got up from the meal. He took off his outer clothing and he wrapped a towel around his waist. And at the end, verse 12, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. And there's little doubt here, and the commentators do agree on this, this isn't me on my own, that John intends us to see here a symbol of the incarnation. The Word becoming flesh. Jesus got up from his rightful, exalted place in heaven. He took off his clothes of glory, his royal robes. He laid aside his majesty. He put on, he wrapped around him our human nature in order to wash us, taking the very nature of a servant. And verse 12, when he had finished, and it's hard not as you read those words, especially with Good Friday tomorrow, to hear the words of Jesus on the cross, it is finished. When he had finished, then he put on his clothes, reclothed with glory, and he returned to his place of honor, exalted to the highest place. In this passage, John is very close to the Apostle Paul in Philippians chapter 2, words we're going to use in just a few minutes, or just a minute, in our affirmation of faith. The Word became flesh. He got up, he took off, he clothed himself to save and to serve us, to set us an example, to call us back from the mess that we sometimes make of our churches and our relationships, that we should do for one another as he has done for us.